The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Well, there goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 112th edition of Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk radio, interviews, music, and more, brought to you by TotalTheater.com and the fine folks at Hewlett Minuteman Press for all your copying and printing needs. You know, time is a funny thing when you're in media. Not that I'm in media like a David Letterman or a Regis or a Tokyo Rose, but I do a weekly radio program, sometimes live, sometimes taped, often a combination of the two, with certain segments pre-recorded and others right up to the minute. So you get occasional time lags or delays. Like, I was dying to talk about the New York Jets the past couple of weeks. I'm not a monster Jet fan, but of all the football teams, they're my favorite, and it's a genetic thing from my dad. We're from that side of New York, the Brooklyn moves to Long Island side, so we don't like the Yankees, the Rangers, the Giants, or the Nets. Well, nobody likes the Nets, but we're diehard for the Brooklyn Dodgers, a.k.a. the New York Mets, the Knicks to an extent, the Jets, and the Islanders. By the way, the Islanders play something called ice hockey. There's a bunch of guys who skate around with sticks, and they chase after a little round doorstop called a puck. They may not know this, but hockey was once a professional sport in America. H-O-C-K-E-Y, with teams and jerseys and everything. Now, I don't want to wallow in nostalgia, but gosh, wasn't it only a year or two ago that you could go on a Long Island Railroad train after a Ranger game and listen to five or six philosophers in every car heatedly debating the subtler aspects of the contest, such as who sucked, who started sucky, but got better, did so-and-so really deserve a five-minute penalty for high-sticking, and how come they stopped serving beer after the second period? Good thing we brought our own. The golden age of hockey in New York. But of course, now there is no hockey. Quel dommage. The players have been on strike for a year, with a second year quite possible. And just to show you what great shape hockey was in even before the strike, I was talking to one of the regulars on the Mikey and Jimmy show last week. They're a comedy rock music show on Saturdays at 5:30 here on WGBB. Kind of loud, brash, morning zoo stuff in the middle of the afternoon. And, you know, these are guys, you know, baseball fans. They love hard rock music, Limp Bizkit, Fred Durst, wrestling, Howard Stern, that whole vibe. And I asked the co-host of the Mikey and Jimmy show, Robin. You know, they so idolize Howard Stern that they also have a Robin, only it's a he. At least as far as I can tell with his clothes on. And we were all yakking about sports, and I mentioned the hockey strike, and he was like, hockey's on strike? And Jimmy and I, and engineer Tom, were all like, yeah, since a season ago. And Robin's like, wow, I don't follow hockey. I had no idea. Now, granted, someone who is not a fan of something or directly affected isn't going to know the ins and outs of a particular situation. I mean, there was a two-week bus strike in Brooklyn and Queens, but it probably hasn't even crossed your mind unless you live in Flushing or Broad Channel. Or 2 weeks ago, there was one of those new reality shows on television. Yep, they found yet another way to exploit human weakness, banality, and greed, and our capacity to keep watching it on a show called The Will. It had to do with the friends and family of this multimillionaire all battling to see who's going to inherit his ranch. And it just died. I mean, I didn't see it. No one saw it. It was the bottom-ranked show in the Nielsen's that week, and CBS yanked it after just one episode. First time they'd done that since 1993. Because, you know, the episodes were all in the can. They were ready to air for 10 weeks. But audience interest was so minimal. And with a reality show, if you don't hook them right away, there's almost no point starting from the middle. So, boom. The Will was rescinded within a week with Cold Case reruns on in its place. Now, if you're not a big TV watcher, or you're not into Survivor, Big Brother, The Great Race, The Apprentice, all that stuff, you can be forgiven for not even knowing that when there was a will, there wasn't a way. but I'm not a big reality fan, and I don't watch those programs as a rule, but from reading the papers and from CBS's big hype, I knew about the show, and I heard about the cancellation. Now, imagine a professional sport, and I'm not talking about indoor highlight, okay? I'm not talking about the Purina Pet Olympics. I'm talking the National Hockey League being so out of the loop that a 20-something guitar-playing modern Long Island male on the radio would be completely unaware as to its existence, or non-existence, as this case may be. But anyway, the hockey strike doesn't bug me, because while I will root for the Islanders if they're playing, I never really got into the sport, and I can't say that I miss it. I'll root for the Knicks if I pass them on the TV dial, but I'm not big on b-ball these days either, and let's face it, for weeks, the Knicks stayed on top of their division while playing worse than 500 ball. You want to root for them, but it's like, oh, come on. There's another team with a better record than the Knicks in a different division, and they're 10 games back. So the Knicks coach was fired, and you get the feeling even Woody Allen and Spike Lee are like, forget this. Maybe there's a good bocce game in Washington Square Park. Now, the Mets were in sort of the same position last season. They were only playing 500 ball, but no one else was playing any better, so there was this false pennant chase going on all the way through June. It was kind of exciting, but also when the Mets fell apart in July, it's not as if we should have expected better. They were the same crappy team as the year before, maybe with a smidgen more power, thanks to Matsui, but sports writers and fans could make believe the Mets were in the hunt because they hadn't been blown out of the forest in May. And right now, it's the same with the Knicks, but somehow just not as compelling. It's as if we know they're going to collapse, and some other team's going to go on a tear, just a question of when. Plus, the Knicks are owned by Cablevision, so it's like rooting for Hitler's team. You know, it's like, they're like Max Schmeling, so no matter who they're up against, they're the bad guy. They're doing okay, they're doing their best, but you're dying for their owner to fail. Anyway, that is basketball. Baseball, I am a diehard Met fan. Have been since my preteens, and being a Mets fan means always having to say you're sorry, of course. And last year, the Mets were slightly better than the year before, but just not better enough. It was supposed to be a rebuilding year, but we expected a new roof, a new paint job, and a sun deck, not just a new door on the garage. Which brings us to the Jets, who really were new and improved. And it bothered me all season long that sports writers were dismissing them, saying that they couldn't beat the better teams. Which was true, but they beat all the worst teams, and pretty much all the teams on the same level. A poor team does not finish the season at 11-5. And when they opened the season 5-0, it was amazing how everybody said, don't pay attention, it doesn't mean anything, they're the same old Jets, they've just had an amazingly easy schedule. Well, I'm sorry, the same old Jets would not have gone 5-0. They might have gone 3-2 or 4-1. But they ran off 5 straight victories against worse teams, and at the end of the day, that makes you 5-0. And if you're lucky, it gets you in the playoffs, as it did the Jets. I remember their 6th game of the season, which they lost. And before the game, all the commentators were saying, this is a must-win game to show that these Jets are for real. And when the Jets lost the game, the Boo Birds came out and the Told You So's came out. And I was saying, you know, they are now 5-1. Had they lost one of their early games and won this big game against a better team, you know what they'd be? 5-1. Standings are cold, hard numbers. You know, if I want to buy a CD, I can go to Barnes & Noble or Tower and pay $18 for it, bring it home, and listen to it. I'm also trying to find the CD on eBay or Half.com for $8 or $9. Or if I know somebody who's got the album, maybe I can borrow it, dub it onto CD, and listen to it that way. At the end of the day, the main thing is I've got the music I want to hear. And it doesn't matter how much or how little I paid, or how I came about it, the music is in my grasp. So, if the Jets went 5-1 by beating 5 cruddy teams and losing to 1 good team, or if they went 5-1 by beating 1 good team and 4 cruddy teams and losing to one cruddy team, and they're still 5-1. And yes, later on in the season, it became apparent that the Jets had serious weaknesses. I think without Curtis Martin barreling his way down the field like a yardage vacuum cleaner, the Jets would have gone 8-8 or maybe 7-9 instead of 11-5. No question, quarterback Chad Pennington has leadership charisma, and he can move the ball downfield. But he was injured, and he doesn't have the arm for long bombs. And the playoffs showed you can't always rely on defense to win the game for you. They're there to keep it close, but you have to have an offensive touchdown once in a while, not just punt returns and lucky interceptions. When the Jets were eliminated in that second playoff game, one columnist wrote, very astutely, that, yes, the kicker was the GOAT. Twice he was asked to step up to the moment and make two fairly long kicks late in the game, 43 yards and 47 yards. Now, those are not gimmies, but a professional kicker should be ready to make them. Or, if he misses one, not miss both. But the sports writer, while acknowledging the kicker's responsibility, also said, look, the team should not have been in that position to need a field goal twice. At some point in the first 60 minutes, somebody on the offense has to be getting in the end zone. So, now that the season was over, you can go back and say, okay, the Jets were not good enough to beat the elite, but they made it to round two. Everybody predicted one and done. Instead, they were two and through. But credit where credit is due. They played 2 hours and 10 minutes more football than the Giants did, than a dozen other teams did, and they didn't quit. When the other teams made mistakes, the defense was usually ready to capitalize. And for all their lucky breaks on the Jets' schedule, all the mediocre teams they drew early in the season, it's still no picnic winning 11 of 16. How many Jet teams of years past? How many teams in general, especially since the invention of the wild card, how many teams have snuck into the playoffs with worse records? And yes, the Jets lost that last game of their regular season, a game that started with them not knowing whether they had to win it to make the playoffs. And as it turned out, they didn't have to win it. They were able to back in. And it was troubling that they lost the game. But Coach Herm Edwards had a point when he said, in effect, a team that's 11-5 didn't really back in. They strung 11 wins together, and that's why they made the postseason. So, if Cunnington's shoulder survives the surgery, and he's got someone to throw deep to, and Curtis Martin stays Curtis Martin, and John Abraham doesn't get pink eye, and the new offensive coordinator isn't someone who can't hack it, next year should be just as interesting as this one, if not more. And I brought all this up, not even to talk about the Jets. Go figure, right? I mean, that's the beauty of this show. I can spend 10 minutes talking about the thing I wasn't even going to talk about. In radio, we call that creativity. In real life, we call that ADHD. But my point was, I wanted to talk about the Jets for the past few weeks to get off my chest my feelings about their being denigrated unfairly. And to make my point of whether you win 5 games at the beginning of the season or 5 games at the end of it, they all count the same. But because I get only an hour a week to do this program, sometimes I'm quite limited in the time I can take for various segments. And when I have interviews, those can take up anywhere from half to three-quarters of the show, between the opening and the closing and the commercials. Sometimes I'm left scrambling just to say my thank yous before the final bell. So forgive me if this whole rant on the Jets feels a week late. But last week I had that really cool interview with Al Aronowitz, the guy who got the Beatles and Dylan together and managed the Velvet Underground. And I also wanted to play my Tsunami Relief song, Swim Away. It's not for Tsunami Relief. It's a song that gives us relief from hearing celebrities do other songs about the tsunami. Anyway, there was no time to talk about football. And I don't often get to talk sports on this show, which is mainly given over to comedy, music, and theater. So I thank you for indulging me this week. And to make it up to you, we actually have an up-to-the-minute score. Thanks to modern media technology and a whole bunch of good people at Lucent and Verizon, the NFL, and Goodyear, I'm able to bring you on this radio station the Super Bowl score. I don't think any other program on radio or TV has this information coming out of Jacksonville, Florida at Alltel Stadium. As it stands right now, the score is 0-0. We're at the pre-beginning of the first quarter, just 191 hours before kickoff. But again, you heard it here first. The score in Jacksonville, tied, zip-zip. If anything changes, we'll be sure to break in and bring that to you between now and 8 o'clock. In fact, since this is radio, you are free to imagine a crawl along the bottom of your speaker, 0-0, with 15 minutes left to play in the first quarter. No other station, not ESPN, not WFAN, has such instantaneous sports coverage. Not only that, while the other stations are busy interviewing the teams and the coaches and the odds makers, tonight, on Days Gone By, we eschew all that. We eschew it up and spit it out because we have an even more amazing guest, someone who knows more about horse flesh than pigskin, someone who has more experience with antlers than uprights, a real life doctor, a veterinarian, Dr. Elmo Shropshire. And not only is he a vet, but he started as a horseman and a jockey, just like his dad. And he has fascinating tales to tell about his early years on the racetrack. But that's not why you know Dr. Elmo. And you do know him. Because he wrote one song that entered the canon. I mean, he's written dozens of songs, straight songs, funny songs, novelty songs, but this one tune, which he adapted from another songwriter's idea, this one started as a funny ditty, it became a novelty hit, and then a phenomenon. It went from a song that mocked and teased a cultural totem to becoming a beloved part of that ritual. Loved by many of the same kinds of people who might have been offended by it when it was first coming out. It's all about a Christmas hit and run by a man who drives a sleigh and plays with elves. That's right. The man who co-wrote and sang Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer is with us on Days Gone By tonight, Dr. Elmo. And again, my apologies for having him on closer to Valentine's Day than Christmas, but so goes the timing of radio. Besides, isn't it in the nature of this show to play Christmas songs anytime but Christmas? And if you still don't know the unnatural nature of the program, stay tuned, because we bring you an hour of smart talk, silly talk, special talk, and music. It's all rated DGB-13, the Days Gone By equivalent of the movie's PG-13, although this one's really closer to DGB-PG, so you can untie the kids and stop burning their nipples with matches. Or at least let me have a try. And who am I? I'm Dave. Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, journalist, humorist, and Elmoist, host of Dave's Gone By, heard every Thursday night at 7 on WGBB, AM 1240, and live streaming on the web at am1240wgbb.com. And you can also hear vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By Thursday nights at 8 and 11 on DFSX Radio, clickable through my website, davesgoneby.com. And it's also the place to buy CDs of the show. You can grab a copy of my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. You can visit my sponsors. And you can find out all sorts of other information about the program, of which this is number 112. We're calling it Reindeer Games. And we'll let the games begin with Dr. Elmo right after this.
Okay, listen to me. No, I mean, listen to me on compact disc, where bunches of past episodes of Dave's Gone By are yours to hear over and over again. Comedy sketches like the Baghdad Elections and Handyman Yoni, guests like Neil Sedaka and Karen Grassley, puns, politics, and punchlines, all just $14 a disc, shipping included. Visit davesgoneby.com for all the details, or call 516-295-1511 for me on CD.
Oh my God, the wedding is next month. We need flyers, invitations, booklets. Irving, we are screwed.
No, we're not, Pearl. We'll just go to Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Hewlett Minuteman? What can they do?
Printing, engraving.
Really?
Letterhead, souvenirs.
Wonderful. Are they still at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett?
Yup, 516-569-5577.
Well, stop dawdling. Let's go.
Yes, dear. Day after the wedding, I kill her.
Hey Dave's Gone By listeners, if you like hearing me, you'll love reading me even more. So hurry and get my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with hilarious plays that were performed in New York, like King Solomon the Wise and Blind Date. 232 pages of Pure Dave, only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback. To get your copy, call 516-295-1511 or visit my website. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB in Freeport, New York, and live streaming on the web at am1240wgbb.com. There are a lot of singer-songwriters and musicians out there who write amazing songs and songs that filter into the popular consciousness, but it is extremely rare to have a song that becomes a holiday novelty number in basically our lifetimes. I mean, there were a bunch, I guess, that came through in the late 1800s and 1900s, became Christmas carols and songs of the season. But certainly as long as I've been around, there have been only two that have joined the canon, and what's odd about them is that they're both novelty songs. There's Adam Sandler's Hanukkah number, which really has taken its place. I mean, you will hear that in shopping centers and Rite Aids and Duane Reade's, along with everything else, because, let's face it, how many Hanukkah songs are there? And it filled a need in a wonderful way. But then there was one Christmas song that came along recently, and God knows there's tons of Christmas music all year, you know, being released constantly, and if radio stations can play Christmas music nonstop for 3 weeks, there's got to be a lot of it out there, and not just old songs being redone by different people. But if there's one song that crept into the consciousness and stayed there, it is, of all things, Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. Now, believe it or not, on the phone with me right now is the man who wrote and sang that song, and it's celebrating its 25th anniversary. So please welcome to the neighborhood, Dr. Elmo. Hey, Dr. Elmo.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
I am great. How are you doing?
Great. It's my season now.
That's right. We're taping this just before the New Year, so this must be the busiest time for you. This is when the phone rings off the hook, and everybody wants you to tell the same story over and over again, but you got to tell it here. So tell it. How did it happen?
Well, a friend of mine had the idea for it, a man named Randy Brooks. I was doing some funny songs at the time, and I played the show, and he came up after the show, and he said, I have this idea for a song that I think would be perfect for you. And he sat down and started singing parts of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, and I thought, that is a wonderful concept. And I recorded it soon after that, and I didn't expect anyone to play it on the radio, but I just recorded it to give to some friends of mine for a Christmas gift, kind of a gag gift. A few of my friends took it to a radio station, and they started playing it on the radio, and a lot of people called in, said they wanted to hear it again. They couldn't believe what it was saying. A lot of others said they never wanted to hear it again.
And, well, then let's roll the story back a little bit. And first of all, you had been doing some music before then. So, but, I mean, you weren't a musician. You're a veterinarian.
I was a veterinarian, and when I was about 35, I got interested in a bluegrass band that used to play around San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to go and watch them everywhere they went. And they said, if you love the music so much, you should try and play. And I said, oh, I think I'm way too old.
But and, yeah.
They encouraged me, and I got a banjo and started playing in a bluegrass band. Maybe 6 months after I started playing the banjo, I was playing in a band. I was not that good by any means, but, you know, good enough to scrape by, and I was practicing constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And no one in the band wanted to sing. Most bluegrass players are more into the playing than the singing.
Right. Picking and grinning are the two prerequisites of bluegrass bands.
So I started singing. Whenever I'd sing a serious song, you know, something like Mother, They Just Laid Mother in Her Grave,
yeah,
people wouldn't take it that seriously. They'd be snickering a little bit. And I finally realized that I probably should go with the flow and just sing funny songs instead of doing the serious stuff.
And these were, but you sang funny songs by other people for a period, and then you started writing your own?
Yes.
Cool. Do you remember, like, the first novelty tune that you came up with?
I think the first one I came up with was called You Done Sprayed the Love Bug with DDT.
Oh, man. Okay. Do you remember any of the... Oh, you must remember. Everybody remembers the first. So can you sing a little, or can you give us a little?
Well, I have some other songs that we've come up with. Grandma's Killer Fruitcake.
Okay.
Once the Grandma song came out, I started writing a lot of funny Christmas songs.
Right.
But I had one called the Betty Ford Clinic that had a line that went, I got to get in to the Betty Ford Clinic. I got to find a way, I swear. Though I never have been strung out, I would love to say I hung out with the stars who check in there.
Cute. That's the thing that people don't get about necessarily the song Grandma's Got Run Over and some of the other songs that you've written is the fact that they're pretty dark. I mean, back in 25 years ago when you wrote the song, again, people might not realize there was must have been some level of controversy about it because it wasn't a standard, you know, Santa's coming, put up your stockings tune. I mean, did you
not
get
at all?
Yeah.
When it first came out, it was played on the radio a few times and there was some protest, and then they banned it from the radio.
But then the next
year, they started playing it again, and I got a job playing at a club in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
When I got down there, I could see there was four or five blocks away, there was a big line of people standing out there. And first, I thought they were in line, but when I got up there, they all had picket signs. They were strolling around saying, stay away from this concert. It's ageist, sexist, and violent against women.
Oh, God. And somehow the song outlasted that. I mean, did you ever bother to go over and talk to those people, and you just looked at them and said, you know, they'll never get it?
Well, you know, they called me up
before
then and left a message. I didn't get the message, but they called me up and said, we don't want you singing this song. It's really demeaning to older people. And then when I got back that night, I got that message. But I talked to them a little bit, but they didn't have much of a sense of humor. They were called the Grey Panthers.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yes.
I guess when you're first starting up an organization like that, you can't have a sense of humor because you've got to take everything seriously or else nobody will take you seriously.
That's right. And it was good publicity for me. At the time, I was scared to death. I thought, I don't know what's going to happen.
But you never got any problems with, like, the Christian or religious community. They never had... You know, they never gave you any flack. I would figure these would be the most likely to be problematic because it's, ooh, Christmas.
They have not. In fact, you know, a few years after the song was, you know, after I was picketed and the song was banned from a number of radio stations,
It
became one of the four songs played at the first, you know, on Desert Storm. It was because it wasn't religious. That was one of the things that appealed to them. They didn't want to be playing a lot of religious songs over there.
Right.
So they played Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer and Elvis's Blue Christmas.
Well, I guess they figure that, you know, Iraqi grandmother's getting run over by tanks. This was kind of a good song to play while that was happening.
That's right.
But the other interesting thing is when you have the success with that song, even when you see the video, I believe the difference there is Grandma lives. Doesn't she wake up or something like
comes
that?
Comes back, yeah.
She comes back. So did you feel, even after the song started having some success, the pressure to be a little more commercial in your songwriting or not to go as dark as you might have before because you don't want to lose, you know, I don't know if MTV would have played the video if Grandma... You know, you're standing over Grandma's grave.
We didn't think they would. Although there are some people who love the song and think that we chickened out when we had Grandma come back. There's also an animated movie about her, and she comes back in the movie.
Right. So, I mean, there was a conscious effort, I'll bet, to make sure that, well, you know, kids will be watching this, and maybe, you know, we don't want them to have to ask Mommy and Daddy, and this be the first time, like, a six-year-old says, what is death?
Right.
You know, there's probably a better way for them to learn it than seeing Grandma getting trampled to death by a reindeer.
Especially with a song that's so prevalent and popular.
Exactly. But is there another side of the coin on this song? Obviously, the song made your name. Obviously, it gave you a career and probably a very, very busy December for the past 25 years. But do you then, when you write other songs or do other albums, and your publicity people were kind enough to send me two of the more recent ones, Christmas All Around the USA and the Martha Stewart song. But you sometimes get the worry that so many artists have that no matter what you do, no matter what great songs you write, no matter what better songs you write, you're always going to be the Grandma's Got Run Over by a Reindeer guy.
Well, that's true. Very well put, Dave. I am the Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer guy. And we believe that we have at least another six or seven songs that are equally as good as Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened at a time when I didn't have a record company and didn't have any kind of promotional support when the song came out. And the only support I had was through listeners. So many listeners called up the radio station that was the way that Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer became popular.
So it was a real groundswell kind of roots song.
It was.
People voting for it on Dr. Demento and that kind of thing.
Yes.
But again, does it bother you, though, that will always be the song, you know, unless a miracle of some sort happens?
It does bother me a little bit because we have written and found so many great songs since then.
The holiday is near now, the nip is in the air, but I am missing someone, and it's more than I can bear. My little paper Santa keeps falling off his sleigh. My powdered sugar snowballs taste more like balls of clay. Without your magic touch, it's getting clearer every day. And Christmas isn't Christmas without Martha. My napkins won't be folded like little angels' wings. My guests refuse to use my painted pinecone napkin rings. And following my rancid butter star are three fermented kings. Christmas isn't Christmas without Martha. I had to call the fire department to put out my brandy nog, and I totaled my new chainsaw trying to slice my licorice log. My figgy pudding souffle is solid as a rock. My carrot custard choir boy lies curdled in his crock. My house of gingerbread is falling like your stock. Christmas isn't Christmas without Martha. Whip it good. Why doesn't mine turn out like that? I can't understand it. I use the very same ingredients. I wonder if she's telling the truth about this recipe. Oh, Martha, my creations will never hold a candle. Your candy apple reindeer's nose will outshine any scandal. My crushed cranberry placemats are oozing just a bit. And like yours, my Jell-O halo is not a perfect fit. And my kippered crusted Christmas bells are tasting just like shit. My manger made of melon makes me look like the felon. Oh, Lordy, how I'm craving my luscious lifestyle's paving. Christmas isn't Christmas without Martha.
I hate my family. The holidays came and went, and I didn't get a satellite radio.
Oh, who cares? You've got more than enough cool radio to listen to on WGBB.
Well, sure. There's Dave's Gone By, Thursday nights at 7, but what else?
Shh, calm down. Right after Dave, there's the instrumental invasion of smooth jazz, hosted by Mike Shimeri at 8, and then Dave comes back at 9 on Thursdays with Filler Up.
Well, that's okay.
Of course it's okay. Plus, you've got radio psychic Joyce Keller doing her thing Wednesday nights at 11.
Oh, man, she's been on for years.
That's right. And you can listen to another WGBB veteran, Bonnie D. Graham, talking about the single life on Long Island's Dating, Friday nights at 6.
What about comedy? I like comedy.
How about Mikey and Jimmy? Comedy, hard rock music, and live bands in the studio, Saturdays at 5:30. And you can also get a few laughs about serious topics like news and politics on Your World with Joe Salzone, Sunday nights at at 7.
Let me get this straight. Joyce Keller, the psychotic.
Psychic.
Wednesday nights at 11. Mikey and Jimmy, the funny. Saturday nights at 5:30.
That's right.
Fridays at 6. It's Long Island's dating. You think Monica can hook me up?
No.
Sundays at 7 is Joe Salzone. Thursday nights it's you at 7. Mike Shimeri at 8. And you again at 9. Did I get it all?
Nice job.
I don't need a satellite at all.
That's right.
That's good. I read somewhere the ultraphonic waves would interfere with the space aliens in my head.
Why do they always come to me? What's playing on Broadway? I'll tell you what's playing on Broadway, and I'll do it by checking Performing Arts Insider. Off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, off-off-off-Broadway. You keep adding offs, they'll keep adding listings. Who's in the cast? What's it about? Is it good? Can you bring the kids? Performing Arts Insider is the theater guide. Call 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511, or go to TotalTheater.com and click on Performing Arts Insider.
Hi, this is Dr. Elmo of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. Thanks for listening to Dave Lefkowitz on WGBB 1240 AM. For the last 10 years, it's been pretty much my project, year-long project, to either write and come up with other Christmas songs, and we have come up with some great ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that if we had come up with one of those songs when Grandma came out, that one of those songs could have been just as popular. But with the consolidation of the radio ownership nowadays, it's not easy for a lot of people to call in and tell radio stations what they want to hear.
Yeah,
pretty much it goes the other way. Programmers for large radio chains, they usually dictate what they want the public to hear.
Yeah. Well, also, you could call up a lot of times your local radio station. The actual ownership is somewhere halfway through Atlanta.
Right.
500 miles away. You know. Actually, not this radio. This radio station is owned and operated out of Flushing and works like a Babylon. So it's fairly local. But then again, you know, we run this radio station on $5.98 a week. Anywho,
that's the kind of radio that's the great radio. That's where everything. That's where everything starts.
True. But speaking of starting. Let's just go back away from the music for a moment and the fact that I kind of dropped this in before, but it is rather interesting that you're a vet and a horse trainer. How did you get all into that?
I was raised on a farm, and then my dad was a jockey. He was a very famous jockey. For three years, he was the number one jockey in America.
Last name Shropshire?
His name was Elmo Shropshire.
Oh, so you're like an Elmo Jr.?
Yeah, well, okay. I have a different middle name. That was the only difference.
Wow, okay.
But then he got too big to be a jockey, and it was a tough time for him. He was a national superstar, and he was a spokesman for Pierce Arrow Automobiles. And then all of a sudden, when he got too big, he grew to be 5'11" between the time he was 18 and 19. And he tried to diet. He did everything he could to keep riding, but couldn't. And so then suddenly he had to go back from being a superstar to just being on the farm. And so they never wanted that to happen to me, although I had the same thing. I was very little until I was about 18 and had been riding and expected to become a jockey.
Really?
But when I was 18, I grew about 6 inches taller and couldn't, you know, I couldn't make the weight anymore. You have to be about 105 pounds.
Well, it's funny, I'm just reading, for the first time, Seabiscuit, which is a marvelous book. Have you read it?
I have. It is a wonderful book.
And is it true, I mean, you're mentioning that your father tried to diet, but the things they talk about in there of what jockeys felt that they had to do in order to maintain a weight that was probably about 25 pounds less than what they really should weigh as a normal person.
That's right.
Did your dad ever go that far?
He ran in rubber suits.
He did that.
He got in steam boxes.
Wow.
He starved, and he was so weak he could hardly stay on the horse in the later times. And they started writing about him. They said, he's such a great rider, and he's awful now. You know, all those things happened, and I guess people knew that he was getting too big.
And did he have any of the terrible kinds of spills that they mention in the book?
He didn't have any really wrecking spills, but anybody who rides racehorses a lot you always get hurt. He was hurt a few times, and I was hurt a number of times. I used to get thrown from horses weekly.
Oh, my God.
Yes. They bear up and fall over backwards on you and those kind of things.
Well, how do you then... You know, I once had a bicycle accident, and it wasn't even a terribly bad one, but that wrecked some bridge work in my mouth that was, you know, a long time fixing. And it took me about a year and a half before I had the confidence to get back up on the bike again. Now, I'm a wuss, I admit that. But how do you get thrown off a horse, have a horse fall on you, and then say, yeah, tomorrow I'll, or, you know, when I'm out of the hospital, I'm getting back up on that pony?
Well, that's the mindset of the racetrack. The racetrack is a totally different life form from anything that we know outside of the racetrack, and I was raised around there. And they would always say, as soon as you get thrown off, get right back on. And that was the mindset. And I remember a horse ran into a tree once with me, and I was knocked out, and they took me to the hospital, and took me a while to regain consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I was sore all over. But the very next morning, they said, you know, come on, we're going to, you know, there's nothing broken. You have to get, you know, get back on. And I went out the following morning and rode again.
Wow. And, but then you did have that growth spurt and you stopped doing it, but you stayed with animals. You stayed as a trainer and a veterinarian. Now, do you still practice as a veterinary doctor?
I stopped about 5 years ago because the Grandma Project became such a full-time job that I couldn't practice as a veterinarian anymore.
Cool. Well, I mean, obviously December is a very busy time, but the rest of the year, you're busy, doing concerts and preparing, writing new songs, doing CDs, or what? What's a...
Yes. This is how our year will go.
Mm-hmm.
We write a new album, new Christmas album, every year. So we'll start writing in January, and we're writing both a Christmas and a Halloween album.
Oh,
yeah. We'll write and record that in January and February. We'll spend March trying to sell it to a major record company or major retail distributors.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start, and then I play in a bluegrass band as well.
Right, oh, hopefully.
So we do that some. And then we spend the rest of the year trying to place our products in stores and, I mean...
So is it more than music? Are there like T-shirts and the whole usual schmear of grandma stuff?
Well,
stuff?
there's a singing reindeer that's really popular. They sold 1.5 million copies in the last 3 years. And they have all different kinds. They have one now. It's in a rocking chair and it rocks back and forth while it sings "Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer."
But you're part of you say they, but are you? You get something from them. I mean,
I do. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I work with the company. I usually promote the toys mm-hmm. when I'm doing my interviews during December.
Well, yeah. Well, that's fine for you to promote that. And also, do you have a website where people can find out about your music and buy stuff and buy your CDs and?
Yes, it's Dr. Elmo, Drelmo .com, like Drelmo.com.
Drelmo.com.
And we have some of our non-Christmas music on there. I have a song called Dr. Kevorkian, another dark song.
Uh-huh.
Has a line that goes, well, come and see Dr. Kevorkian, because he's been trained to take away all of your pain. He got one part carbon, he got one part oxygen, and you're never, ever going to have to see another doctor again.
That is good. And it's true. It's funny because it's true. Is he still in prison?
I believe he is.
Awful. Well, he's a hero, and they're keeping him
right.
in jail. What do you think of the commercial? I mean, you're actually part of it, so we have to keep that in mind. But the fact that Christmas has become like the most important commerce holiday in America, it isn't just a religious thing, it isn't just a spiritual or familial thing. It is now buy, sell, and if merchants don't sell enough during the holidays, their year is all screwed up and the economy, suffers. Are you okay with Christmas being so enormous?
Well, I wasn't for a while, you know, until it started benefiting me. As a veterinarian, it never mattered whether it was Christmas or not. You know, when animals got sick, they had to be treated, even if it was in February.
Right.
So usually as a veterinarian, my income hadn't, Christmas had no bearing on my income. But for people who are selling anything, it seems to me nowadays, Christmas, unless it's food, but even with food, Christmas is the big season. I used to always think, because I have Christmas albums, that Christmas was the only time I could sell my albums, which is true.
Oh.
But the funny thing is people who have blues albums, they sell 80% of their albums at Christmas, too.
Well, that could also be because that's when everybody has to give gifts to everybody.
That's right.
So, you know, an album that they wouldn't necessarily buy for a birthday or whatever, it's like, oh my gosh, I need something that costs less than $20 and I have to give it to a coworker. Hey, he likes blues. Here's a blues album. Yeah.
That's right.
Which made me think you're also doing Halloween albums. What are some of your Halloween tunes?
Well, I have a new one. We just wrote all those songs in November.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is about, it's called The Witch and the Toad.
Uh-huh.
And a man dresses like a toad and goes to a Halloween party, a costume party, and he meets a beautiful woman dressed as a witch, and he really wants to be with her.
Uh-huh.
So he asks her to go outside, and they go outside, and they become a little bit romantically inclined towards each other, and then they kiss.
And
he has this fantastic feeling that comes over him when they kiss. And then in a little while later, she flies off with a broom.
Uh-oh.
And he's permanently a toad.
You are a sick man, Dr. Elmo. I like that. But here's I'm going to give you an idea for next year or the...
I need one.
Probably do some for this year. Well, you know what? Nobody had... There's only one song that anybody really seems to know for Easter. You know, Easter Bonnet,
yes.
Irving Berlin. Where are the Easter... People see each other on Easter. They go to church. They trade hats and stuff. Where are the Easter songs?
That's right. There aren't many Easter songs. Just the Easter Parade is the only one I know.
Yeah.
Actually, my friend and I wrote a one-minute Easter song to go in an Easter Bunny toy.
Uh-huh.
And so we do have a little Easter song.
So maybe there's an EP in that or something, like a four-song sampler. And knowing you, you probably do something really sick punning on, like, Easter seals or something.
Well, that's a good idea. The one we did is fairly...
I get 10%.
It's like a toothless bunny.
Right. Oh, gosh. So I ask this of all musicians that I have on the program. Where do you see yourself in another 10, 15, 20 years as far as your career and what you're doing in music and all that?
You know, nowadays, it's even though it's hard for me to believe, after 25 years, I'm now getting the message from many people that I'm to Christmas what Bing Crosby used to be.
Oh,
and
that's
it's hard to believe because I grew up with Bing Crosby. But now, anyone, since Grandma's been out for 25 years, people say, that's the song I grew up with. That is my Christmas song. Most people who are 35 or 40 years old, for 25 years of their life, they've been listening to Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, and that's been the big hit at Christmas for them. So one thing that I would like to do 10 years from now,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to be on an NBC tree lighting special where I have a nice sweater on like Perry Como and I'm out on in Rockefeller Center singing Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer on NBC.
You know, what they really want to do is you wouldn't be lighting the tree. They'd get like some more like Clay Aiken type people. But they're
right.
Have this giant reindeer with a big light bulb nose, and you get to screw that in while you're singing, and then the red nose goes on just to sing the final chorus.
Dave, that's a great idea. I think that pitch will put me over.
Well, good. And again, I get 10%.
All right.
10% of Dr. Elmo is quite a lot, and I want to thank you for giving a certain percentage of your time today to us to be in the neighborhood. Just want to remind everybody to check out drelmo.com. There's no period in there. It's drelmo.com where you can find out about his gifts and his rocking chair reindeer and his many, many CDs. And I want to thank you very, very much. Even though we're in January, 11 months away from Christmas, when you're talking to Dr. Elmo, it's always a holiday. Thank you so much, Doctor, for being with us.
Dave, it was really a pleasure to be on with you.
What do the letters DFSX stand for? They stand for Dave's Gone By, that's what, because DFSXRadio.com is rebroadcasting vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night at 8 and 11 Eastern Time. So you hear me on GBB and then listen to me on DFSXRadio.com every Thursday night at 8 and 11. It's all the Dave you could ever want, kind of. Sponsor me, Dave's Gone By. Run your ad, folks will buy. If you want to reach the public, sponsor me. Advertise on this program for incredibly reasonable rates with long-term discounts. See prices at davesgoneby.com or call 516-295-1511. Sponsor me. If you're wise, on Dave's Gone By, you'll advertise. If you want to be successful, sponsor me. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Thursday, January 27th, 2005. Hope you enjoyed my chat with Elmo Shropshire, a.k.a. Dr. Elmo. Please do visit his website, drelmo.com. He's got a Valentine's Day song up there already. Plus, you can order CDs, including Dr. Elmo's Twisted Christmas and one disc called Up Your Chimney. There's also a full biography, discography, with 30-second song samples. They even got a cute T-shirt that has a drawing of a reindeer on it saying, "Get down, Grandma, I'm flying tonight." DRElmo.com. And we'll be hearing one more Elmo song at the end of the show. La 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 la, la la la, Elmo. No, different Elmo. Another Christmas song, God help us. It's a little more serious, but very clever, called Christmas All Across the USA. But before we get going and Elmoing, couple of thank yous and reminders. Thank you, Dr. Elmo, of course, and to Program Director Tom and to all of you for listening. Thank you to my sweet and reindeerest wife, Joyce. Thanks to my guest 2 weeks ago, Jeffrey Tozer. Jeffrey emailed to say, "Great show. Nice going. I really thought you kept the interview moving along and interesting. It made the whole thing very easy and fun. Please consider me an FOD, Friend of Dave." Well, that's FOD for thought. But Jeffrey also adds, "My girlfriend also listened to the show and was very impressed with your opening comments. The word she used was intuitive, and she knows how to use words. She said your thoughts on reruns and classic episodes were right on the money, so way to go. Please always stay as swank as you are. In your heart, you know it's right. Jeffrey," unquote. Thank you, Jeffrey Tozer, and my new FOM, friend of me, and your girlfriend, too. And that's certainly worth a plug, so everybody check out slycrooner.com to hear Jeffrey's very cool music. If you put Boz Scaggs and Manhattan Transfer and Frank Sinatra in a blender, well, you could feed a lot of Sri Lankans, but they'd probably throw up. Anyway, slycrooner.com for Jeff Tozer, drelmo.com for Dr. Elmo, and davesgoneby.com for everything else. A reminder that Montgomery's instrumental invasion of smooth jazz is up next on GBB, or if you want to hear an older episode of Dave's Gone By, go to my website, davesgoneby.com, and click on the link that brings you to DFSX Radio. From 8 to 9 and 11 to midnight Eastern Time tonight, you can catch a vintage Dave's Gone By. In fact, you can make it an almost all Dave night, because I'll be back here at 9 with Filler Up. Really eclectic selection tonight, from Mozart to Philip Glass to Sarah McLachlan and the Cowboy Junkies. You'd have to go to college radio to get a mix like that, so catch me again at 9 on Filler Up. And again next Thursday for the 113th episode of Dave's Gone By. With us will be a publicist, promoter, and author named Tom Perich. If you've ever wondered how to get really low-cost publicity for your business or organization, besides advertising on Dave's Gone By, there are bunches of other avenues you can take for a little time and almost no money. And Tom Perich has put them all in his book, Wacky Days, How to Get Millions in Free Publicity, and we'll give him some free exposure here next week. Plus the return of the rabbi, so you know it's going to be quite a show. 7 p.m. Thursday, February 3rd for Wacky Dave's. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz saying goodnight all across the USA and gone by.
This morning I got up and read the paper and started feeling gloomy as could be. I wondered where to find the Christmas spirit. And here's the answer that came through to me. It's in the big Montana sky, it's in the Rocky Mountains high, it's in the wide Nebraska plain, and down the rugged coast of Maine. The Mississippi running free, the Blue Ridge Hills of Tennessee, you know it's Christmas all across the USA. It's in the Carolina pines, in the Pennsylvania mines, Alaska's glaciers white with snow, the frosted fields of Idaho. It's in the people everywhere, with loving hearts and dreams to share. Yes, it is Christmas all across the USA. Now people, I know this world is changing, and things are moving fast, and some folks are complaining that the real Christmas is past, but I've been all around this country, and one thing that I know is there's Christmas spirit everywhere you go.
In the big Montana sky, it's in the Rocky Mountain high, it's in the wide Nebraska plain, down the rugged coast of Maine, the Mississippi running free, the Blue Ridge Hills of Tennessee. Yes, it's Christmas all across the USA.
And the Carolina pine.
It is Christmas all across.